Фальче,
bienvenue.
Bienvenido.
Добродошли.
Magandang araw sa inyo.
Welcome.
Добро пожаловать.
欢迎收听 Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Добро пожаловать to Here on Earth.
Bienvenido a Here on Earth.
What we're listening to is a traditional Incan song from Peru based on an original text in Quechua that translates, "For the joy of the highest realm, I deeply embrace you. Our human hope is limitless, like a tree that produces endless fruit to give us life. Hear my prayer, Mother and Guide of God. Don't forget that I wait for you to reveal your son." What's fascinating about this prayer is that the mother it invokes is actually the mother goddess of the Incan people, disguised as the Virgin Mary. It's taken from a CD called La Noche Buena, produced by Save, the San Antonio Vocal Arts Ensemble, and it features the first Christmas celebrations of the New World, compositions from the 16th century, inspired by the indigenous music of newly converted Incas, Mayans, Aztecs, and African slaves. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, radio without borders, making people-to-people connections around the world. This hour, the first Christmas music of the New World, Restored. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Again, that 800 number, 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is hereonearth@wpr.org. What resonances and borrowings are you aware of in other Christmas traditions? What bleeds through from older pre-Christian customs and beliefs? How do they survive? Joining us from Texas Public Radio in San Antonio are the co-founders of Save, Kovita and Christopher Maroney. Christopher is the ensemble's artistic director. Kovita is its manager. Welcome to Here on Earth, the two of you.
Thank you, Jean.
Thanks.
It's a really very, very exciting and interesting music, this. How did you find it? And how does it connect to the work you do with Save?
Well, we've started Save in 1989, and our very first concert was at the cathedral here in San Antonio, founded by the Spanish colonial presence in Texas. And so we thought that we would start by doing music of the conquest, if you will. And in the research for that very first concert, we quickly encountered this music through a friend of ours at the University of Texas and through a musicologist at UCLA. And so it emerged right away when we knew that we wanted to look at music that was relevant to this part of the world.
And it's such an interesting blend of influences. This is a real synergy at work. I think, Christopher, you've written about that.
Yeah, well, what this music reflects is what was really happening on the ground in the New World during the Spanish conquest, and particularly during the first century, from about 1520 to 1620, 1630. And so the influences are, of course, the huge Spanish influence, a huge indigenous influence, which includes the Mexicans, the Aztec, the Inca, the Maya, but also as well a very substantial West African influence, and that's because of the slaves that were brought over to help build the colonies, mine the silver, and work the plantations during this time.
And yet, the Spanish, at least allegedly, didn't believe in slavery. There were edicts against it. There's a papal edict, and Queen Isabella disallowed it. I think this was in part to distinguish them from the Portuguese.
Yes, the Portuguese were the main slave traders at that time. And you're right, the Pope and Queen Isabella both said that there shall be no slavery in the New World. And so this was the mission of the missionaries as they came. So what the Spanish did was they purchased slaves, African slaves, from the Portuguese, but then allowed them to buy their freedom after a period of years of working. And so some of the music that is on this CD reflects that influence, the African influence. And in particularly in Puebla, there was a huge number of Africans working there. And as they bought their freedom, they became members of some of these choruses and orchestras that played in the cathedrals, and so that their music was then adapted and used by the Portuguese and Spanish chapel masters.
Let's listen to one of the cuts from the CD, La Noche Buena, which, by the way, means Christmas Eve, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah.
And that...
Well, yeah, literally it's good. The Good Night.
The Good Night. Good Night. And this is a difference between Latin America and North America, where Christmas Eve is the big feast rather than Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me about one of the African cuts that we have that we can listen to, and set it up for us, would you?
Okay. How about Dame Albricia, Mano Anton?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a song that describes a couple of African children who are talking to one another. And they're saying at the very top, "Be joyful, Brother Anton, that Jesus is born in Guinea, West Africa." And the other says, "Who gave birth to him?" And then the first child says, "A virgin and an old man are his parents." And then they say, "Let's go there. Let's bring him gifts." And then a whole group of Africans comes in and sings the refrain, and then the rest of the song is about dancing and singing before the child and bringing gifts. Now, this was written by Gaspar Fernandez, who was a Portuguese chapel master in Puebla, Mexico. And as I said before, there was a huge African population there, and Gaspar Fernandez had among his singers and instrumentalists former African slaves. And so he adapted the vernacular, the dialects, the rhythms, and even some of the harmonies into the music that he wrote to be performed. And this would have been performed at Christmas time by not only the Africans, but the indigenous members of the choir, too. So this really has, I say, what I would call this is probably one of the very first examples of what we now call world fusion music. This was the first time that these particular cultures were coming together and interacting, and it created a very wonderful and creative atmosphere artistically and musically, despite all of the horrors and the inequalities and the things that were wrong with the conquest. One of the things that was really positive that came out of it was this interaction between the cultures. And so what I think you're going to hear in this song is that, exactly that. You're going to hear something that doesn't sound quite European and it doesn't sound quite African, but what you hear in it is sort of the beginnings of this world fusion type of music, and even some little elements of what later became jazz and Afro-Caribbean.
Let's listen.
Y todo lo negro de Bayana.
You know, oddly enough, this reminds me a little bit of what happened in the wake of the Second Vatican Council when the Latin Mass was thrown out.
You're right. That's true.
You know, it's funny you should say it that way because actually after a number of years, right after the conquest, the Pope back in Rome actually reined in the practices in the New World and started to ban this wild music making in the New World.
He thought they were having too much fun.
It took how many hundreds of years for us to be able to stomp and clap in church again?
Exactly.
And for the most part, because of African-American influence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also the, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I would say also the Latino influence, too.
Absolutely, yeah. But, you know, there's something troubling about some of the lyrics in these pieces. For example, in Esso rigor e repente. Tell us about that. That's another piece by Gaspar Fernandez.
You know, yeah, right. And Gaspar Fernandez himself was Portuguese. And so, honestly, you know, here we are 500-ish years later, and as we read these lyrics and we try to examine what was the intent of Gaspar Fernandez, why was he putting these ideas together with this music in what is obviously a Christmas villancico. Maybe Christopher could talk a little bit about what specifically the text says, and we still don't know exactly what his intent was.
Well, this text is one of the very few pieces from this period that deals so directly with the issues of slavery and the relations between Africans and the Spanish. And the piece even opens up. I mean, Esso rigor e repente means this sudden hardship. And not that it comes right out and says the sudden hardship of slavery, but that seems to be what is intended. And then it goes on to say, certainly here I'm not favored. So it's a Christmas song, so it says, but although the Christ child was born a little bit white, we all amount to brothers under the skin.
Mm.
And so it says, then tonight we'll be all white. In other words, tonight it's Christmas Eve. Mm. This is as if we are all equal. And I think, since this was written by Gaspar Fernandez, a Portuguese chapelmaster, there's a sense of sympathy toward the plight and the situation. Definitely the missionaries were against slavery. So I think this is not an anti-African song at all. It's pro-African, and it's talking about the problems of slavery and that it was a fact.
Yeah, but well-intentioned perhaps, but misguided.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking about the 1600s, and you know, this slavery just was a fact.
Yeah, tonight you're going to be all white.
Mm-hmm. But only a way of saying tonight we'll all be equal.
Yeah. So this is Esso rigor e repente. We'll listen to it as we take our first break. You're listening to Here on Earth. I'm Jean Faraca. My guests this hour, Kovita and Christopher Moroni, are the co-founders of SAVE, the San Antonio Vocal Arts Ensemble, who produced the CD La Noche Buena that we are featuring this hour on Here on Earth. It is the original Christmas music of the New World. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Curiate fasciuela quante camisa capisa calde frisa canutio de tabaco
ca prasa perute apu guitarriela gremente. Here
Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders is the interactive radio show that features voices from all over the world. How about yours? The program airs live weekday afternoons at 3 Central Time, and podcast listeners can stream the show at our website, hereonearth.org. To join the conversation, call toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-800-642-1234. Elsewhere, drop us an email, hereonearth@wpr.org. Leave your phone number and we'll call you back. You can also post your thoughts at our web forum or leave a message at my blog. We're Radio Without Borders, here on Earth, from Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the original Christmas music of the New World. With us, Kovita and Christopher Moroni, who are co-founders of the San Antonio Vocal Arts Ensemble, SAVE. They have produced the CD, La Noche Buena. We've been listening to selections from that CD throughout the hour so far. Let's listen to a cut that is Aztec. In origin, and actually uses Nahuatl, the language of the Aztecs. It's called, you're going to have to help me with this, Christopher.
Is this Xicoche?
Yes, it is. Okay. Those X's always get me.
This is Xicoche Conetzintle, and this is a lullaby to the Christ child. It is, as you said, it's in the language of the Aztecs, Nahuatl, which was basically the lingua franca of the entire Aztec Empire. The music itself is adapted from the music and rhythmic patterns of the Tlaxcalan people. This was the indigenous tribe that was settled around the area of Puebla. Again, this is another piece by Gaspar Fernandez, and there are some distinctive rhythmic elements of the Tlaxcalan people that Fernandez put into this piece, which I think you will hear.
Xicoche, 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 Xicoche,
bit about the instrumentation here. How did you decide which instruments to use, how to adapt this music to the modern ear?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because the music as it exists from the cathedral archives contains no indication of any kind of instrumentation or percussion. So what we needed to do is to go back to the history and the writings of the time and the paintings of the time, because it's clear from eyewitness chroniclers of the time that all of the music was accompanied by instrumentation of some sort or another. In these kinds of pieces, which are based on indigenous rhythms, the Aztec language, there were specific kinds of instruments that were used, and we were able to look at paintings that were done just after the conquest by Aztec artists that showed the kinds of percussion instruments and melodic instruments that they would play. Like, for instance, what you heard on this piece were the teponazli, which is a log drum, and you also heard the huehuetla, which is a tall drum which has a deerskin head, as well as ayacashtli, which is a kind of, it's basically a gourd with seeds in it that you shake. Mm. And we knew that these existed from the writings of the people at the time, the Spaniards who wrote down what they were seeing, as well as the paintings that were done by the Aztecs. So we could actually see what these instruments looked like and the kind of relationship that the player would have to the instruments, as well as how the group would form to perform this. So we were able to, for instance, with some of the instruments, we were able to have modern reproductions made. Others, we were able to find versions of them that are still being made today in Mexico, and we found them right here at the Mercado, the market downtown in San Antonio.
Uh-huh. What did you find sold there in the market?
In the market, we were able to find some of the huilacapitzli, which are clay
flutes
in the shapes of animals.
Oh,
and gods,
yes,
and goddesses.
I've seen them in museums.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We also found the rain sticks we use, and of course those have become rather pervasive. The ayacashli are basically maracas. And also some of the stringed instruments. We didn't find them here, but we found them in New York, and also we found one, the guitar that we use on the album, we found in Peru when we were on a trip in Peru.
So as far as you can tell, this is an actual recreation of the blending of instruments that would have been used in these performances? Or
yes,
in these ceremonies,
yes.
I should say.
Yeah, it would be most accurate and fair to say that from all of our reading and research, we came as close as we knew how to come, and then took some leaps of faith. Christopher did several of the arrangements. I did a couple. And one of the other ensemble members, Jody Noblet, did several arrangements that we recorded on this album.
And who and did again, the translations?
Christopher and I did those.
And how did you do that? How did you translate from Nahuatl and Quechua?
Well, there are some Nahuatl dictionaries that exist from the 1500s that were put together by the Spanish. And then over the years, there have been other scholars who have worked with these dictionaries. And so I relied basically on the work of current-day scholars who have researched these older books. And basically, it was just go word by word and try and figure out what was being said.
Now, are these living traditions? Are these languages that are still in use? Is this music that you would be likely to hear?
You know, we had a really incredible experience in Bolivia about 2 years ago, and the group was there. We did several concerts in the jungle lowlands of Bolivia. We were in a shop talking to the shopkeeper. She couldn't come to our concert. This was a very remote village. We were on a dirt road for 3 or 4 hours to get to this village. Anyway, so we decided, the group gathered, we decided to sing a song for her because she couldn't come to the concert that night. And as we're singing, from the plaza comes running in a local woman, and she starts singing with us.
She cut right behind us and sang, it was Hanak Pachup, Kusi Queenie, the piece you first played, and she was behind singing it.
So I say, yes, it's a living tradition, to answer your question. That was
and it was very meaningful to them because the shopkeeper and the woman were both crying.
Oh.
The languages are all, there's Nahuatl still spoken in parts of northern Mexico, and Quechua is really predominant in Peru and in the Andes in general.
It should be noted that the particular Nahuatl that we're using on this recording is called Classical Nahuatl, and it was the Nahuatl which was spoken by the basically the royalty, the Aztec royalty. So it's not quite the same Nahuatl that you would hear today.
I have to say that little vignette story I told you about our experience in Bolivia, if you can imagine, you know, these seven Americans living in San Antonio, Texas, were in Bolivia, that experience probably galvanized our connection with this music in a way that nothing before or since has. The research and all the study and all that stuff is all great, but going there and having that one direct contact with, you know, someone living from the tradition, it was a really meaningful experience.
I can understand that, because it's not just restoration of something that's antiquated.
Not just academic.
Yeah, but this is alive and is meaningful to people who remember it and probably still use it. But I want to bring in a friend of yours who is very kind at the last minute to say he would join the conversation. He is Mike Whittington, with whom you've collaborated in the past, and he is now executive director of the Monterey Museum of Art. Mike, welcome to Here on Earth.
Thank you, Jean.
And thank you very much for joining us. What aspect of this music interests you the most?
Well, I became intrigued with the music, as Christopher and Kavita did, from looking at some of the original sources. And in pre-Columbian studies, those are the surviving works of art, ceramic vessels with narrative scenes painted on them, monuments, and in many cases, original frescoes that exist showing groups of musicians. For example, one of the most complete examples of a musical performance is in a structure at the site of Bonampak in the Mexican state of Chiapas. It shows a coronation scene, and the scholar Mary Miller has termed the group the Boys from the Bonampak Band, showing a group of elaborately attired mask musicians playing wind instruments and percussion instruments as well. So I became intrigued with this, and when I started my project a few years ago on the Mesoamerican ball game, in the course of my research and my discussions with scholars, it appeared that musical performance was a key component of this elaborate ritual sport. And then I discovered Save and went from there and had them commissioned them to create music based on extant lyrics from the late Aztec, early colonial period.
Mm.
And we had a great time together, by the way.
Yes, I can believe that. You know, I'm curious about one thing. It's the Jesuits who became the missionaries to the indigenous peoples of North America. How is it that the Franciscans prevailed in Mesoamerica?
That's a fascinating question, and I don't know the exact answer to that. There certainly was a Jesuit presence in portions of Latin America, but that was curtailed by the Pope. But that's a fascinating question. I mean, certainly there, if you look at the examples of missions in Mexico and what is now California,
right.
Many of those were Franciscan.
And I wonder what kind of influence they had. I mean, the Jesuits were scholars and sort of had a mind of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not surprised that the Pope banished them from Latin America. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jean.
In
Bolivia, when we were the missions that we were singing at in Bolivia were actually founded by Jesuits, and I believe there was a movie called The Mission.
Oh yes, that's
maybe
right.
Maybe like 15 years ago, and that was kind of covered what Michael was referring to about the problems that the very socially progressive, is the word that's coming to mind, Bolivian missionaries, their appreciation and willingness to work with the indigenous people, which eventually caused Rome a lot of consternation as things weren't going quite the way Rome envisioned. But anyway,
the indigenous people.
So that's sort of just a reference to the fact that there were some Jesuits, we know for sure, in Bolivia, because
Right, and then the indigenous people truly loved the Jesuits. There are stories about them lining the roads as the Jesuits were asked to leave and weeping.
Ah, really?
To say goodbye to them, yes. So obviously it was not, the withdrawal of the Jesuits was not something that either the indigenous people or the Jesuits themselves wanted to have happen.
Do you know why they were withdrawn?
No, I don't. It may be like Mike and Kavita said, that it's just they were too socially liberal. It may be something along those lines.
Mm. Some things never change.
Things never change. Basically, the Jesuits were not beating them over the head with this is the way it is, and this is the belief system that you must absolutely adhere to, and this is the XYZ to the last letter of the law. There was a lot of give and take.
Yeah, and Jesuits are known for not towing the party line 100%. They can be a bit difficult to control, and I think Rome was experiencing that.
Mm-hmm. And they have a reputation. One of their great achievements was to translate the Bible into indigenous languages, into
mm-hmm.
very, very fiendishly difficult indigenous mm-hmm. languages, like Navajo, for example. I wonder if the Franciscans were doing the same thing with Quechua and Nahuatl.
Well, actually, they in Mexico, I know for sure they were doing those kinds of things, and they were organizing. They were having the Aztecs write down their history. They were teaching the Aztecs the Spanish language so that the Aztecs could then take their language of Nahuatl and transliterate it into something that could be read by Spanish-speaking people. So there was a really big educational push among the Franciscans, at least in Mexico.
And what would you describe as the elements in the music that you've recreated that really belong to the European tradition? And how was that accepted, received by the local people?
Well, in all of the music, actually, there is an element of the European tradition, and that would be polyphony. This multi-voiced, multi-layered, moving parts within the music. That was not something that really was part of the musical culture of the indigenous American world. And when they had things that were more akin to what we might think of as Gregorian chant, and when indeed they heard Gregorian chant for the first time, they loved it. They went into the churches just to hear it, and the Spanish would find them practicing and singing Gregorian chant in the streets. And apparently it was similar enough to the kind of chant that they had used that this was really attracting them. They also were just like anybody would be with a completely new form of music. You'd be very, very interested in it and very curious about it. So this is a way that the Spanish, they used music as an aid in evangelizing and conversion. And so from the Spanish point of view, they wanted to learn about indigenous music and indigenous instruments and indigenous languages so they could write music that would appeal to the indigenous people. And then from the indigenous point of view, they were fascinated by the new sounds and the new instruments and the new languages that they were hearing.
So there really is a cross-pollination going on here.
Definitely. That would be, if I could characterize this music, I would say that it's sort of a hybrid, a cross-pollinization, just like you said, of you know, the Spanish European, the indigenous American, and the African, the West African.
And how does it get lost? Maybe it doesn't, actually. I mean, you described that first cut that we heard, which, by the way, we're about to hear again, as representative of world music.
Mm-hmm.
Fusion music.
I think what happened, it became suppressed.
Mm. And then it surfaces again.
Well, you know, another phenomenon that took place, Michael might actually have more to say about this, but a phenomenon that took place was that the indigenous people themselves and the American-born Spaniards began to favor everything European. There was kind of an elitism that sort of evolved. And so I think in a sense...
Oh, that's because the baby Jesus was white.
Something mm-hmm. like, exactly. Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you listen to music that happened, you know, this fusion was only being created, this musical fusion was only being created for the first 100 years or so. After that, it all became very, 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 very European, and this spark was lost. And Michael, did that occur with other art forms?
Well, what you see in the early colonial period certainly is a layering of elements. You see the European veneer on top, and when you start peeling away, there's an indigenous foundation, and that existed for several hundred years. So you didn't have the end of indigenous cultures at the time of Spanish conquest. You simply had a fusion, as this music attests. But one thing I do want to point out, many of the elements of Christianity, many of the fundamental tenets of Christianity would not have been unfamiliar to indigenous Americans. For example, within those religions, there are the traditions of twins, for example, male twins, such as we have in the book of Genesis, and also individuals who are both human and God, who are sacrificed and then rise from the dead.
And certainly blood sacrifice was
absolutely
very familiar to them.
Absolutely.
We'll continue this in just a moment. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth. My guests this hour, Christopher and Kavita Moroni, are co-founders of Save, the San Antonio Vocal Arts Ensemble. And we're also joined by Mike Whittington, Executive Director of the Monterey Museum of Art. We're hoping to hear from some of you as well. We have open lines. You're welcome to join us. We're at 1-800-642-1234. We're exploring a musical tradition that may be unfamiliar to you, but there are other Christmas traditions that similarly derive from pre-Christian cultures, such as the Yule log, the Christmas tree. There may be many others that you're familiar with. We'd like to hear how you celebrate La Noche Buena. 1-800-642-1234.
Current, compelling, different perspectives. That's what the Ideas Network is all about. Our well-informed hosts talk with knowledgeable guests, from professors to policymakers, and from authors to experts. And we invite you to join with your questions, too. Stay informed by listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Jean Faraca. HereOnEarth.org is the perfect companion to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Learn more about our guests, topics, and the music we feature. You can subscribe to our podcast, post a message, and interact with other listeners. Log on to HereOnEarth.org and join us live Monday through Friday at 3 on Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the original Christmas music of the New World with Christopher and Kavita Moroni, who have produced the CD La Noche Buena. We have another cut. This one is called Hoy es Día de Placer. Christopher, tell us about this one.
This is a piece that was actually written by an indigenous Mayan. His Mayan name was Mashkin, and after he took... After he was baptized, he took the Spanish name Tomas Pascual. Hoy es día, of course, this is Spanish. He wrote in Spanish, he wrote in Mayan, he wrote in several local languages. This particular one is Spanish, and Hoy es día is a Christmas song, and it says, today is the day to rejoice and sing. Come everyone and dance. We rejoice this day with great pleasure. Therefore, in him, God, we have mysteries of such great joy. Mashkin was before the Spanish conquest, Mashkin was what was known as the holpop of his village, which was the sort of the master musician and a very revered man. This music of his was discovered in the early 1960s by a Maronal priest, Father Daniel Jensen, who was stationed in the highlands of Guatemala, up where the church was, where Mashkin, Tomas Pascual, worked. And as he was exploring in the attic, he found a box, and inside that box were some archives of musical manuscripts which had not been seen for probably 400 years. And this is where this music comes from.
And how did you get it?
Through the work of Robert Stevenson from UCLA, who, when Father Jensen discovered this music, Father Jensen contacted Robert Stevenson. Robert Stevenson went down right away, like the day later, because it was so important. And he transcribed this music, and that's how we found it.
Let's listen.
Todos a bailar. Regozamos este día por ser de todos. todos a bailar.
Now, why wasn't this written in the original Mayan language? Why did he write it in Spanish?
We have to call a clairvoyant and ask her to channel Mashkin.
I'm not exactly sure because in his some of the songs he writes are Nahuatl, the Aztec language. Some of them are various local languages that existed in Guatemala, and some of them are Spanish. So,
was this a great cache of music that was found? Written by him.
How many pieces were found
of Tomás Pascual
in that folio?
I wouldn't call it a great cache. I'd say maybe there were 30, 35, 40 pieces. I mean, also in the box were some of the earliest known existing European polyphonic manuscripts from the New World. These were brought over to the New World from Europe.
There's quite a story about the recovery of these manuscripts, most of it found in cathedrals, as I understand it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, these are all from cathedral archives, and in most of the cases, it's been musicologists that I know. Most of the cases have been musicologists from the United States that have who started to go down to Mexico, to South America, and to cull from these cathedral archives what they could. I know of stories I've heard. There was can't remember her name, musicologist from Texas, and she went down to Mexico. She went to a small little church in one of the small villages, and the head of the church was about to throw away a lot of these manuscripts that were from this period, from the 1600s, because they were just taking up space, and he asked if she would like them, and she said, of course, yes. So she took them back to Texas and then made arrangements to have them go back to Mexico and be sent to a museum, I think the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City.
Mm. And what condition were they in?
They were those particular ones, they were getting damp. So some of the pages were destroyed. I've seen Father Daniel Jensen actually contacted me after we came out with one of our albums, and he showed me some of the manuscripts that he had found, and they had they were covered with deer skin, and there was still hair on the skin.
Oh my!
So the binding of the book was made out of deer skin, and it had hair on it. And then you opened it up, and these were very, very, at this point, very delicate pieces of paper, and all handwritten with pen and ink on there.
Yeah.
We also,
in a more conventional sense, have spent a fair amount of time with the microfilm viewer at libraries at UT and trying to discern what's worth, what was usable and what's not. We have not ourselves done any of the primary research in the cathedral archives, in the attics and cellars and as such, but
That's all musicologists have done that work.
Mm-hmm. Gene, yes. I should point out that the indigenous cultures of Mexico and Guatemala were literate cultures, mm-hmm. which distinguished them from the cultures of South America and the Andes. So when Chris pointed out that this manuscript, and that's a great story, had a deerskin binding, that's precisely the way the books of the classic period Maya were bound, in deer hide.
Very extensive literary heritage.
Absolutely, and you can four of the books from pre-conquest time have survived. The majority were destroyed by the Bishop of Yucatan, Diego de Landa, in the 16th century, but four have survived. And of course, most of the body of literature we know from the ceramic vessels as well as the carved stone monuments.
Mm. There are many misconceptions, I think, that North Americans have about the indigenous cultures of Meso and South America based upon what we know about the nomadic tribes of North America. But these are very different cultures.
They were urban cultures in the sense that we characterize the urban societies of ancient societies of Babylonia, Greece, Rome, Persia. They had literature, art, complicated, complex art styles, highly developed religion, great architecture, and phenomenal works of art.
And a great theology and philosophy, the Popol Vuh.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us something about that?
Well, it's interesting that so many of the discoveries have been made in churches, and the Popol Vuh is a manuscript that is a transcription in Maya, side by side Maya and Spanish, and it is the earliest surviving manuscript of this great story, this great story of creation. That we believe existed in some form among many Mesoamerican cultures. And to cut to the chase, it involves a set of twins, and they are the protagonist of the story, and they are both human and God. One of them is sacrificed and rises again, is resurrected in the center of the ball court. And you read in the Popol Vuh a series of exploits they have with the lords of death, the gods of the underworld. So it's one of the great insights into ancient Mesoamerican religious thought. And it was discovered in a church in Chichicastenango in Guatemala.
Mm. Very sophisticated stuff, and it's been preserved in an anthology called In the Valley of Kings, which is a Norton anthology of the literature of Mesoamerica, produced by Earl Shores and, I can't remember, Portilla. I think it's Portillo. Those two working together. But the thing that makes... You spoke earlier of the racism and how it's evidenced in some of this music, in the lyrics of some of the music. And I think that there's something quite tragic about the inferiority that was internalized and that you can see evidence of to this day if you travel in Latin America, that it's the European culture that's considered superior.
It's kind of ironic that the adoption of the mass conversion that took place with the apparition of the Virgin of Guadalupe throughout Latin America to this imported European religion spoke directly to that feeling of inferiority, because in this instance, this representative of this new religion imported appeared to an indigenous person as an indigenous person and spoke directly to this issue.
Mm-hmm. You've done something with the music of Guadalupe, haven't you?
Yes, we have two previous CDs that deal with the events of Guadalupe's appearance to Juan Diego, the indigenous Nahuatl-speaking peasant. And music
by the way,
her
feast day is Monday. So
little
side trip to the Virgin of Guadalupe is very timely.
Mm-hmm. and it's a cult that continues to be very strong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think one of the things about the apparition of Guadalupe, and as Kavita was saying, that she appeared to Juan Diego as a Nahuatl woman, and she also appeared at the very site where the Aztecs had worshipped their mother goddess Unseen.
Uh-huh.
It was a way of bridging their old religion with this new Christian religion in a way that they were able to accept it and say, "Oh, okay, we can still have our mother. We can still have a remnant of our past and bring it into this new religion," which is why I think there was such a huge conversion that happened after that event.
I see.
And the pivotal moment was that the apparition was presented to the European bishop by an indigenous person who was carrying this huge miracle. So it was sort of like taking this indigenous person, putting him where he didn't feel he himself had stature enough to be appearing and speaking and addressing the bishop directly, and here he was carrying this huge miraculous thing.
Mm. Which gave him great stature. And
another thing that is different about North and South America, Christopher, as you've pointed out, is the intermarriage that occurred. Aztecs marrying, Spaniards marrying, Mayans marrying, Incas, and so forth and so on.
It was huge. Yeah, and I think this is why when we perform this music that's based on African rhythms and vernacular and harmonies, people say, well, why? Because we're the Africans. We didn't know anything about Africans in Mexico. And really what happened was once the Africans were able to purchase their freedom, there was lots of intermarrying going on. And this wasn't just Africans and indigenous, but you had Spanish marrying indigenous and Spanish marrying Africans and Africans marrying indigenous and just about every assortment you could think of. So that today, the genetic pool of Africans is very strong, but you cannot say that you can clearly see an African presence, such as in Brazil, which was controlled by the Portuguese, so that the Africans remained slaves and there was not intermarrying. And definitely that didn't happen in North America.
And of course we see all that, all those confluences in the music that we've been hearing this hour. Let's go out on, tell us what this is.
This is Convidando Esta La Noche. This is a big celebration of the birth of Jesus, and the lyrics are great. They talk about rays of light coming out of Jesus and out of Mary, and all these people are singing, and the baby's crying and laughing, and it's, you know, such extremes. And then they finally end the song. Thank God we're through with the song. It's over. And people will recognize the rhythm that they're hearing here is called the huaracha, and it was made famous by Leonard Bernstein in West Side Story's I Like to Be in America.
Oh, what do you know? Okay.
Another show.
Thank you both very, very much, Christopher and Kavita Moroni, for being with us this hour, and thank you, Mike Whittington.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Yes. Mike is the executive director of the Monterey Museum of Art, and to find out more about Save, go to our website, www.hereonearth.org, and look under Archives. If you'd like a copy of this program, call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1210K. Here on Earth is produced by Carmen Jackson, Joe Hartke, Lisa Boo, Heather Stir, Steve Zelasnik, Lisa Nett, and myself, in cooperation with the Division of International Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. www.international.wisc.edu. Soda.